From our side, the committee members, we have two apologies. One is our chief whip, who is a member of this committee, Mayor Ntwanambi. We have Honorable Onet Dibeer, who is also a member of this committee, who have apologized, and the apologies have been accepted. Before we proceed, we'd just like to introduce ourselves, and after members have introduced themselves, the department will introduce themselves. I am Gauta Mokgoro. I am from the Northern Cape. I am a member of this committee, and it is actually my pet project. Why? Because it is the issue of rural development coupled with the land that brought the people of South Africa together in 1912. And I'm not just a member here, I'm a whip. I'm a city that things take the right direction. So that is why I'm a whip. And I am from the Northern Cape. And from the ANC. Thank you. I'll start from the chair there, this way. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Sir Justice. I am Olukalo Kukani. I'm the Secretary of Development.
I'm a member of this committee. At least I met the minister this morning.
Honorable morning, everybody. My name is Darryl Wirth. I'm also a member of the committee, and I'm from the Free State Province. And I want to congratulate the minister on his appointment. Thanks, Chair.
Our officials?
Angela Bauer, the minister.
Deshni Pillay, content advisor.
Anybody? Anybody? Oh, thank you. Those are the introductions from our side. I will then toss over the coin to the department. And I would like you to tell them a little bit why you call me Om. Yeah.
My name is Edwin Gray. I'm the head of communications for the department.
Good morning. My name is Adam.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning,
Say it again.
Sunday at Sunday Monday. Saturday to tomorrow only. And with the policy respect and the decision.
And the chair member from the Macabo, I'm acting deputy director general.
My name is
Chair. We agree with that. Part of the problem is
The prices got manipulated when people knew that this government needs a lot of debt for restitution, for development, and so on and so on. So those decided to manipulate the prices. That's what we are today. And I think this matter, Sir President Member, it's a matter where there must be an honest conversation in South Africa between those who have and those who do not. Because if it's not handled properly, we won't be able to control the people. We don't want to stick with this environment. Which then says, you will have to use your political skills to appeal to those who have the land to open up, but also appeal to those who want the land, not to want the land for the sake of it, and start doing irresponsible. It's a very big issue. As a result, we have introduced here a number of institutions which they will be talking to. In fact, there are three institutions which they will be talking to, which we are in interest to see. The Land Management Commission, the Land Management Board, and the Valuer General. They will tell you why we are introducing. Those are the key major institutions. Coincidentally, Chairperson, one of the key issues is around the issue of how much of the land which we are owning, which we don't know, as a state. And coincidentally, as I'm saying, the two people, or the two structures responsible for that is this department and Public Works, which I'm supposed to be studying. So there is a link between those two.
Yeah.
So this green paper roughly is about. Then I can hand over to Sunday to talk to all those issues, but you will talk to them in detail. I think after that we'll take questions. But let me also make a request. Given the new assignment, in fact, I already have a stream of meetings from the top. I must deal with some of the major issues. So I must deal with those. How will, during the process, just meet out. Thank you,
Deputy Minister. Let me just outline the procedure we're going to follow here. The department will give a presentation, and because this is an emotive issue, we have decided that we are going to ask questions in writing. So we won't be answering questions now. We will, after presentation, we will then stay and prepare the questions, and I'm sure send them to you. For you now to, in a conducive situation, you are able now to look at the questions, the content of the question, and the summary, so that then on the basis of that you answer the questions in writing, because that will then form part of our record. But just one word that I would like to throw to the department, and I want the department really to, you know, to underline what I'm going to say, that the first generation of land ownership in South Africa, they never bought it. The second generation of land ownership in South Africa, they never bought it. It is possibly from the third generation upward that financial transactions started taking, you know, place in the exchange of ownership of the land. That is one of the basic principles that when we deal with the land issue, we have to consider, and seriously so. And the other one is that land ownership, even up to as we are talking now, is skewed and skewed into a particular race. The question is, are we not all South Africans? You know, when we deal with the issue of the land, these are the principles that we have to put on the table, agree on them, because they will have to come in the form of a question. Agree on them. I've got other things, but I'm not going to waste your time. I've got other principles. If anybody wants to know what I think, can come to me, I can sit down with you. But these are the basic principles that needs to guide any negotiations regarding the land. Now, I'm handing over the department to give us the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. In developing the proposal that we request to comment on, because this is by essentially a discussion document, and there are not final positions there are areas upon which we wish to request comments and input. We have been informed by certain questions which have assisted us in developing the positions we are putting forward. The first question that confronted us or that we are seeking to deal with is the one that talks to what appears to be the questioning of the basis of land reform itself, that we spend so much money or we continue to spend so much money and so much resources in them allocated to land reform. So we're saying that we should be able to answer decisively why should the state continue to invest in transforming land relations, because land reform is about transforming the relations on land. The second question that we're confronted is one that deals with the importance of land reform. Because now and then you will read about people saying that if you spend $1 billion on land reform, you could have spent it on something else. So how important is both the human, fiscal, and other resources? How important is land reform today? And the third question which was confronted as to whether or not South Africa is primarily an agrarian type is born out of the next question that we're going to be asking. That over the years there have been historic dispossessions. So many people have been dispossessed of land. So many previous land owners or people who own and lived on land have been turned into wage earners. Many of us now earn salary. So the question is that to the extent that previous land owners have been dispossessed and been turned into wage earners, the question is, what
can we have presenter. Can we have stability, please? You know, you're talking about serious issues here. Can we please have stability, Chair? If you have a key, I would suggest that you lock that door. Executive Secretary. Thank you.
So, we're then saying that if many people are now wage workers, what is demand for land? And what is the purpose of land reform? And who are the prospective beneficiaries of land reform? And I think lastly, we've been confronted with the question of the impact of land reform on agricultural production and food security. We're saying that we cannot depart from the task of doing land reform, but the question is how do we do land reform that returns a break from the past without significantly disrupting agricultural production and food security? In trying to come up with some technical responses to this question, we're then saying that it is important to continue to do land reform from the perspective that land reform is about national identity. You cannot have a nation without people who are identified with the land. citizenship. You cannot have a country where a great majority of the people do not share in the main attributes of the country, which is what we call shared citizenship. Other writers have called it social citizenship. That's a citizenship, full citizenship includes ownership of the land. And lastly, we're saying that in doing land reform, it is not about just giving money to people to spend fees. It is about an autonomy fostering service delivery. Which one can explain by saying that when government spends money, sometimes it's a consumption subsidy. It's money to buy something to eat. Money for land reform is something that assists people to be autonomous economic participants, to be economic citizens. So we're saying that money spent for land reform is not money down the drain. It's to assist people to become themselves, to recover themselves. So we're saying these are the primary reasons why the state must continue to invest in transforming land relations, which will then define as systems and patterns of control and ownership of land. We are also saying that in finding answers to some of the questions that we are posed, that are confronting us, we cannot run away from what Francis Chief was also referring to, which we're saying that the demand for land cannot but be located in an environment which recognizes the fact that those who have accumulated today accumulated out of its possession. And there's a direct link between that accumulation and the dispossession of the past. So whatever wealth is in society also has a bearing on the people who have been dispossessed. We're then saying that this particular dispossession, historical process, has deliberately undermined the capacity of those who are previously dispossessed to actually productively use the land. Because people have been removed from their land for so long, we cannot, because the question we have asked is, we start after primarily an agrarian society, and the CBE sometimes released the research which said that many black South Africans are actually not interested in land. We're then saying that if there's no truth to that statement, that if it is indeed truthful at all, it is born out of the fact that those who have been dispossessed of the land have also been disconnected from the land because of the historic process of the dispossession. And we're saying that we have a duty to reconnect people back to their land. In terms of looking forward, in terms of our objectives for tomorrow, if we successfully do land reform, what do we want to see as a vision? We're saying that we want to do a land tenure system which deals with every piece of land, every parcel of land in the country. And the Deputy Minister already alluded to the 4-tier system of land tenure that we're proposing to cater for, and I will go into that in a bit of a detail, the 4 tiers that we're proposing. What we're saying is that there should be reasonable access to land for all South Africans, black in general, and Africans in particular, with reasonable access to land with secure rights. We also say that there should be clearly defined property rights. We also say that non-citizens, resident non-citizens, must own land as long as they're engaged in appropriate investment. We're then saying that lastly, we want to ensure effective land use planning and regulatory system, and the key emphasis is on optimal land utilization, so that land is used optimally. The principles that inform the land reform program are three. The first we call the racialization of the rural economy. Call it the other way, transformation of the rural economy. We know that the rural economy, where we have about 17 million South Africans today, is the most underdeveloped part of the country. So we're saying that we need to intervene in the rural economy through land reform to ensure that land is better used and transformed. We're also saying that there must be democratic and equitable land allocation and use across gender, so that it's not that disproportionately male or female, both genders are dealt with, across race, so that not one race unduly owns the land, and across class. And lastly, strict production discipline. And what we're saying here is that it's what we refer to that we want to advance some proposals in land reform which assist us in breaking from the past so that we do not continue this huge land ownership pattern, at the same time not significantly disrupting agricultural production and food security. We also want to inform all our land reform products and programs by saying that when we do land reform, when we do redistribution, or when we do restitution, we want to ensure that our land reform generates livelihoods, it generates employment, and it generates income for those who are involved in land reform. And in putting this to practice, at the moment, we are immediately implementing what we call the recapitalization and development. where we're dealing with all failed land reform programs in 1994, or failing land reform programs, to ensure that we put both money and resources to ensure that we do not allow land that has been given back to the people to fail. We also talk about land tenure systems, as the deputy has referred to the institutions that we're proposing, and I'll be spelling that out in detail as we proceed. But we think that the strategic trust of our land reform is not just a political project, it's also informed by our comprehensive rural development program, which says that we must do agrarian transformation, we must improve the land reform program, we must engage in strategic investment in economic and social infrastructure that should benefit entire rural communities. So we're saying that the land reform and the rural development are linked together at both policy and program, and even institutional levels for coordinated service delivery. I think the second part of this slide talks to the relationship between land reform and agriculture. Many times we've been asked the question, why do you do land reform to let otherwise viable and federal land lie fallow? We're saying that agriculture is at the center of this economic cycle and economic rationale for our post-agrarian structure of land, the land question. But we recognize the fact that people may demand land for other purposes apart from agriculture. So land reform is not just about agriculture. Agriculture is important, but there will be demand for land beyond agricultural use. Looking back in the past 17 years of the implementation of the land reform program, we want to admit that there have been some weaknesses in our policy approaches in the past. And these weaknesses include the fact that we have not been able to take the land market sufficiently well. That every time we are tempted to acquire land for land reform purposes, we had to deal with escalating land prices. We blame on the willing buyer, willing seller approach, but what we're saying is that we need to look for a land acquisition strategy which assists us in managing the discussion in the land market. Because we know that because the state is not really a willing buyer, because in many instances the landowners know that the state must buy the land if it really wants to give the land back to the people. The land prices have really been out of range, that we every year have to pay more for land. We're also saying that we could have done better with our beneficiary support. Those that were given land and those are our beneficiaries, that farm equity scheme, land rights, land and all that. Now we're saying that we need to look at the qualification, the beneficiary selection for land reform generally, to ensure that we truly select people and we support for those who we have selected. We also are saying that we've been very weak in dealing with land administration in communal areas, and like Deputy Minister said, we're embarking on a process to deal with the question of land administration and land governance in the areas of the traditional authority. The government at 1994 set the target of the distribution of agricultural land by 2014. 2014 is just around the corner. We're quite far from getting to the 30% administration target. We admit that this is a good thing. We also say that agriculture has been declining in terms of its contribution to the gross domestic product. And we think we can do land reform in a way that doesn't necessarily lead to a reduction in agricultural production or agricultural contribution to the economic well-being of society. We also note that there is unemployment in the rural areas just like the land reform programs, and that's why we're talking about livelihood, income, and employment in respect of our land reform programs. And we also believe that our restitution model has really been problematic. So to that extent, on the communal areas, we were dealing with the question of clara and constitutionality. We're engaging with traditional leaders to look at what are the roles of traditional leaders as agents of development, especially also in relation to the constitutional authority of municipalities in areas under traditional leaders. Going forward, we say, and I've already alluded to all this, but critical is the fact that we're looking at production models, we're looking at land settlement models that will support production and more state support for productive use of land. I think in terms of the substance of our 10-year proposal, what we're saying is that we are divided into four. We want to propose leasehold in respect of state and public land. We want to propose freehold title with limited extent for private citizens, those who own. With foreigners owning the land in the country, we're saying that like every other country in the world, there must be obligations imposed, there must be conditions imposed, and I will tell them how. In a sense of state and public land, the motivation for proposing leasehold is that post 1994, like the DMS alluded to, Department of Public Works, they own a lot of state land, Department of Land Affairs, now Rural Development and Land Reform, own a lot of land. Provinces who own land, municipalities also own some land which they do not call state land. What we've done is to not use land owned by the state very well for good business. We know that RTPLs can be located in different places, municipalities can be selling land to the highest bidder sometimes, and state owned enterprises also have been disposing of land. Now, what we're saying is that this lack of mechanism to ensure that all the space of government, including state owned enterprises, use land in a particular way, is not desirable. And until we set up a land management commission or other institution that will help us, we're saying that fragmentation is not good for services, and the proposal is that henceforth we want to only lease land owned by the state and not sell it, so that we don't lose it in tribute. With respect to private land, I think we're saying that our proposal is to continue with the current practice that citizens will continue to have free all title over land. What we're saying is that we may need to look at regulatory limitations in respect of titles held by South Africans, especially in respect of primary and unique agricultural land. We know, and we have a different piece of information that we're dealing with, that the land utilization has not been well managed. Conversion of primary agricultural land. We know that conversion from agricultural land to golf estate to give reserves or lack of productive use of this land is a concern. So we're saying that even though some of this land will be privately held, we may need to look at some form of limitation, which may be right of first refusal, for instance, to say that as a citizen, if you want to sell your tribe agricultural land, please offer it to the state. If you want to change the use of primary agricultural land, we may want to intervene in how you do that change. And we also say that if a citizen owns land, especially large tracts of land, what we call non-resident absentee land trusts, if our policy proposal is to promote optimal land utilization, we may need to ask why is that land not being used and what can it be used for. We have then said that we may consider the possibility of introducing land sales. It's also called land quantity restriction. It is not to say that we are going to impose a blanket restriction to say every citizen cannot own more than, let's say, 40 hectares of land. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that in selected areas of the country where we know that people have large land holdings and the land is not being put to productive use, we may need to impose limitations on what a single person may own in those areas. So our land quantity restrictions proposal, or our proposal on land sales, is not to say that we will willy-nilly impose restrictions based on age or based on race or based on any other unfair criteria. What we are going to do is to look at a particular context, a particular scenario, and look at what is best in that area as a basis to introduce land quantity restrictions, to introduce the right of first refusal. We're also saying that there may be need for special consent or approval regimes in selected areas. And if you take coastal land, for instance, I would know that a lot of coastal land has been of attraction to foreigners. We know that some estate agents in the country prefer to sell their land to foreigners. We know a couple of transactions which are not in national interest. We're then saying that through policy and through legislation, we may need to introduce special consent and approval regimes for selected controlled land. If land is located around a military barrack or a military formation, we may need to impose restrictions on our transfers are done in those areas. Those are kind of suggestions that we want to put in the market for debate. With respect to foreigners, I think it's relatively easy. The Constitution imposes an obligation. And the obligation is one that says that the state must pay.
I'm sorry, I'm not asking a question, but some of this terminology one has to understand the you know, the application of such terminology so that we have a better understanding. There's a repetitive use of the word we may. Now, in my understanding, may, you can and you may not. That is my understanding. I'm not saying the Oxford Dictionary's definition, but that's my understanding. Now, why we may, why not we will or we shall? Can you just explain that here?
Well, the green paper, as we call it, the green paper is still a discussion. It's not a final document. It represents our values at the moment. At the point that it becomes a white paper or it goes into a full policy document or a legislation, it then becomes the first proposal. Many of these things require legislation. We have to come before yourselves to give a stamp of approval. In terms of the Constitution, considering the past, our historic past, the Constitution imposes an obligation on the state to create conditions, legislative conditions, legislative measures, and other measures to ensure that citizens gain access to land. And we are saying that the flip side of the coin, if the Constitution says the state must foster the conditions of access of citizens to land, is that you cannot, on one hand, say you have created access of citizens to land, which is a limited resource, and not on the other hand, limit the access of non-citizens to land. So in order to satisfy this constitutional obligation, we feel that there is a legitimate constitutional reason to impose our regulations on foreign ownership of land. We also believe that there are many other questions that we do not have answers to if we do not regulate foreign access to land. I've already alluded to the fact that if the obligation is to foster conditions of access of citizens to land, we then maybe we need to ask ourselves, to what extent are the policies of the state conducive to enable citizens to gain access to land? The deputy minister has alluded to the fact that we cannot authoritatively say to yourselves as our leaders that it is the amount of land that is owned by A or B or C, whether white or black or citizens or foreigners in the country. Because of the challenges with our land registration system, and we're saying in order to be able to even say who owns the land, practically and politically, now we need to be able to then determine the conditions under which foreigners own the land in South Africa. Even apart from the ownership issue, because like the minister stated repeatedly, that the intention is not to totally ban foreigners from owning the land, it is to regulate the conditions of ownership. We are also saying that when foreigners do get interested in acquiring South African land, the ultimate question should be, is that land being used for the greater interest of the country? And there are many examples we can give. We know of foreigners who simply buy large tracts of land, even prime agricultural land for production in the country, to export the products of that agricultural enterprise. And we're saying that if prime agricultural land is bought just for game reserve, for some rich people to come to it in summertime, is that in the national interest? If China bought 500 hectares of land like they did in Africa, in some municipality recently, and to produce a commodity that is not required for the local market, for export only, is that in the national interest? And we're saying that we need to be able to answer this question of whether those who even afford, or those who are buying from out of the country, are they doing that in the greater interest of South Africa and the country? So we're then saying that are the current ownership patterns sustainable to guarantee national interest, including food security? And these are the reasons why we want to regulate foreign ownership, and we'll become a full policy proposal in that regard. So to that extent, we're proposing that you allow us to impose strict compliance with obligations and conditions when it comes to foreigners, that in many cases we must ensure that foreigners partner with locals in respect of land-based investments in the country. We're also proposing that foreigners be excluded from owning certain sensitive and national security land, including land in the communal areas, coastal land, land of heritage nature, agricultural environmental sensitiveness, and other land that we may define that is not desirable for foreigners to be interested in and to continue to own. We also believe that this is a prime area where we can introduce controlled transactions so that we enforce the obligation that there must be disclosure when we buy. We introduce limits on what foreigners can buy. We also impose obligations on whether we want our land to be owned by people who own it for the purposes of holiday, in some areas especially. So the question of our non-resident access land zones becomes very important, and these are the kind of proposals that we'll be fleshing out in full policy proposals to Parliament very soon. In terms of institutions supporting the Land Reform Program, we have three institutions. The Land Management Commission is an overarching institution that we're proposing. The main reason for proposing a Land Management Commission is that several government departments, our department, public works, environmental affairs, transport, human settlement, have a lot of land-related responsibilities. Provinces also use its own land. They perform land management functions. Municipalities also do land use management. A couple of land-related functions. We're saying that we do not coordinate land management functions on the state properly. When the Department of Human Settlement is looking for good land or which to build houses, my colleague who manages state land administration sometimes doesn't know exactly whether state land is available for that purpose. We're saying that we are not coordinated as a state in terms of management of land. Even private land, we do know that it is important to conduct strategic land analysis to know whether even land in private hands the state should go and buy proactively in order to be able to use for good purposes. So to that extent, and to be able to assist us manage your GIT office, Surveyor General, and a range of land management functions and state support, we are proposing the establishment of a Land Management Commission that will be an overarching institution of the state to assist us in better coordination. So the functions of the Land Management Commission will then be advisory, because all these remaining institutions will continue to do their land management functions. But the Land Management Commission will be able to be advisory responsibility for the department. It will also assist us with coordination. It may also have some regulatory powers in respect of auditing. We've already alluded to the fact that we do not even know all that we own as a state. So we're saying that this Land Management Commission may assist us in putting measures in place to ensure that we do regular auditing of what is owned by the state, what is in private hands, and what kind of uses and arrangements function. So it should be, it also acts as a reference point for a couple of responsibilities.
Sure.
Well, private is owned by a private person, and private person, it may not be necessarily the owner of the farm, I mean, somebody who owns a land other than the farm. I think it's an assumption. In order to better regulate the land market, we were proposing the creation of the Office of the Balancing Act. We were going to propose a bill to deal with valuation services in that. But the problem Stephen Wall wants to create the Office of the Balancing Act is that when we engage valuers, they apply their systems, they apply their methods to determine prices. But as a whole, we do not have a comprehensive curve of what is property value. In many countries, they can tell you that this is what the land in a particular area is worth, because they have indicative price ranges for land value. Mm-hmm. We do not have a nationwide comprehensive reliable that kind of curve of property values. To that extent, valuers need to look at a particular piece of land, impose a particular value. To that extent, you can even find scenarios where you get four valuers to look at the land value, a particular land, and those four valuers give you four different values, because there is no reference. So we're saying that this is not desirable. We want to have this value generator that will be able to conduct market analysis, that will be able to use economic comprehensive indicators of how to value that. We think we can do that with this legislation. The second thing is that when the Constitution says that we should do land reform, as part of the land acquisition strategy, like in many countries of the world, the possibility of expropriation was written in the Constitution. The Constitution then said that when you do expropriation, you pay compensation. What is good about Section 25 of the Constitution also is that it says that when you want to pay compensation after expropriation, you must look at certain factors in order to determine the compensation that is payable after expropriation. One of those factors is market value. The Constitution did not say that when we do expropriation, we must pay only market value. The problem we have had over the years is that we have not been able to sufficiently assist the court, or even negotiations between ourselves and the state, or negotiations between municipalities and any private owner, to say, when do you say market value is the only criteria, or when do you say market value is one of the factors we consider in determining compensation payable after expropriation? We are now saying that we would want to use the Office of the Valuation and the legislation that we're proposing to assist us in saying that if the Constitution has assisted us by saying that some people might have acquired land without actually buying it, like we said. Some people might have acquired land with state money in the past. Some people might have acquired land with substantial state support. Why do you then want to sell it at market value? When you yourself acquire that land with substantial state support, or whether when you yourself acquired it and you did not even pay market value for it. So we are now saying that we can use the legislation to prescribe a framework for knowing when you do market value as one of the criteria to be considered in determining market value. And we think that with historical information, with scientific information, this office can assist us in putting those factors. Even when the court wants to then determine what is the price to be paid after a compensation, it will be able to say these are the factors and this is the way I can go about computing. I've already alluded to the probity of some of these valuations. I've alluded to the conflict of interest and malpractices in the valuation industry and the hazardous nature of some of these valuations. And we're saying that the Office of the Valuation will be tracking that. In addition, we hope that when we create this office, we'll be able to have a statutory office that will assist in the provision of fair and consistent land values for rating and taxing purposes. So that when I do have a piece of property, I do not say to the Sanitary Revenue Service, because I do not want to pay a lot of taxes, that my house is worth 1 million. But when I want to sell to citizen B, I say it's worth 2 million. And when I want to pay property rate to the municipality, I say it's 800,000. Because when I need to pay, I reduce the value. When somebody else needs to pay, I up the value. So we're saying that the value that I can assist us in ensuring that we have fair We're saying that the value that I can assist us in determination of compensation by putting up a framework as an administrator. It will also be a specialist valuation and property advisor to the state. It will assist us in setting and monitoring service delivery, undertaking market analysis. Many municipalities do valuations because they need to do property rating. And many of us contest the values that municipalities do here on our property because they do not have fair criteria to bring their valuation. That's what we are saying, that this office can play that role across the state. And creating and maintaining a database of valuation information. The Land Rights Management Board, on the other hand, is an institution that we are proposing to deal with those who live on farms, those who work on farms, or those who are related to those who live or work on farms. We know that a lot of evictions continue to happen, despite the laws that are put in place. So, at the moment, we have what we call the Land Rights Management Facility that assists us in providing legal representation for those who are evicted on farms. We are proposing the establishment of a land rights management board to be composed of those who live on farms, those who own the farms, the police, the community development, human settlement, and a range of interested stakeholders to ensure that we have an institutional body that can assist in maintaining harmony in relation to those who are fast. It will be a body that sits on top, it will have local land rights management committees. We're also proposing to do what we call sustainable rural settlement to create houses for those who presently live on farms, so that when they are evicted, they don't find themselves on the street. We also want to plan proactively what some people call agri-village to accommodate those who live on farms. And we feel that this land rights management board will assist us in maintaining and protecting and upholding the rights of those who live on provide labor on farms. And I think it will then lead to the question of bigger representation and the reach of other possibilities. In conclusion, Chairperson, and members, we're just saying that the task that we are faced with in land reform, we do not undermine the fact that it's an historic process, historic injustice. It's not something, it was something created over centuries. It's not something that we can deal with and wish away and solve overnight. We're not underrating the enormity of the problem, so we are humbled to say that we will be guided by the self-image search for solutions to the problem that is facing. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Sunday.
Yeah.
Sunday.
Yeah.
Oh, the day. Okay, Mr. Sunday. Thank you for your very comprehensive report. I'm sure members of the committee have been sitting with an open mind. They have grasped what the report says. This is just the what is called the green paper. Why green? Why green? Well, let me pass that one. The green paper, and we are moving towards the white paper. And then when is the black paper? I don't know. But however, this is the green paper. In my understanding, this is just the beginning of the process, and it is green. Yeah. Yeah. So, as I said from the beginning, that we would really like to go into this matter thoroughly, because we are the National Council of Provinces. We have to refine what is proposed here. This is just a proposal. We have to guide it from our capacity as the National Council of Provinces. We have to refine it. We have to give it effect. And we have to give it the necessary efficiency that when we deal with the land, we deal with the land with efficiency, we deal with the land with persuasion. Because here, we have two sides. The one side is the have, and the other side is the have not. And this is very peculiar. You know, the if you look at the races now, it makes it more peculiar. But we have to be very, very endurance in our dealing with this matter. The deputy minister has just said that we don't want to see the Zimbabwean situation. And I don't think there's anybody who would ever suggest to see the Zimbabwean. That was an ugly thing, very ugly, and it's still ugly. What we want to do here, the somewhere in the report, it says when dealing with the land issue, we don't want to disrupt food security, which is very important. So we said at the end we are then going to say, fine, we have got the report, but we are now going to stay and expression in the form of writing, and that is part of trying to apply the necessary efficiency. That is also an attempt to give you too, when you answer the question, you must answer it from a very conducive situation. First understand the content of the question and the direction the question is taking. Those are the things that we'll have to deal with. And if we can do so, then I'm sure we may find at the end, from the basis of this green paper, that we have taken at least one or two steps forward. So I think on behalf of this committee, we say thank you, and thank you very much, and try more and harder. Try more and harder. This is a very, very serious issue, and we'd like to see it being finally, you know, settled, where every South African citizen will say, even if I don't have the land now, but I've got the right to the land. And the government must really be a government of all the people. Thank you very much. Yes.
Thanks, Chen. Maybe just for your information, is that as a digital requirement, you have already started rolling out the consultation throughout the country on that topic. So if members are interested, I think our parliamentary officer can give more information to them so that you know exactly where it's getting implemented across the country.
Thank you very much. But I think also, yeah, also from your department, if when you roll it out into the country, if it can also engage us from Parliament, it will be much better. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Are you covered? Oh. Any question from your side to us?
Or comment?
Any just inquiry from them? Who was who? Not question, inquiry.
No.
Nothing.
Nothing.
We've covered everything. What else can we?
Honorable what? Any inquiry?
Just one thing, just quickly. Can you see the 30% behind the store which wasn't made? The other day, a question was asked in the NCRP. Only by 2014 will they say they will know how much land is taken. But like we have that trust. And one of the ministers said, no, we know how much land the state has. The only trouble is we don't know where it is. What he meant is, I think there's municipalities own some of the land, and they're trying to sort out. He said, we do know how much land. Is that true?
I'll ask my colleague to help me.
No, I'm going for answers.
No.
Okay.
Thank you, Sir President. I think when we talk about what the state owns, Stanley is covering. When you talk about the state, you're talking about provincial national government.
And local?
No, we don't include local government.
Why?
Into the about the creation of state. Local is part, okay. When we include local and parastatal, we change the concept from state to public. I think that is what is happening. So we know what the state owns.
It's a debate on its own. Let's not enter into that. Because if that's how you interpret it, then we have a problem with it. But it's fine, Chair.
That is how law defines. So maybe it will help to change the law. We know what national government owns. We know what provincial government owns. We know what municipalities own. I think what confuses the public is when you start dealing with issues at the level of accounting in relation to accounting standards. That is where the confusion comes in terms of what you account for. Account
issue is what is depending on the land that you stay on. That is what it is. It is what it is.
Thank you.
Why is there a question that says who owns South African land?
That question relates to the entire body of land in the country, including residential and private. I think the reason being, okay, amongst many reasons, is that because the racial classification was removed post-apartheid, you can't go back and say whether the owner is white, whether the owner is black. You also can't tell whether the company is black or white. You've got to go back and look at the shareholding. And there are various ways in which ownership is diluted in terms of domestic testing. So that's part of the reasons why there is a question about who owns the property.
Thank you. Any more? Nothing. Thank you, department. We are happy.
Questions have come.